Okay, we're going to begin at the bottom of Tesamid Beis, 10b, five lines from the bottom. Last words on the line. Omer le Rav Kahana le Rav. Rav Kahana says to Rav. Now, although this is a new sugya, it's directly following the sugya that we just finished. So, looking on directly the sugya that we just finished, let's just go back to our pages for a moment. And we were discussing three proofs that who does the carcass go to? And we said the carcass goes to who? The damager or the damagee? The damagee. He has the carcass. And the damager just pays him back the difference. And that was sugya 4 that we did. Who retains the carcass? And we brought three proofs. And the last proof on line number 7 was Chizkiah, where it says, "Vahamesi alo, the carcass shall be to him." And we learned that it's going to the victim. And we brought a brisa that explained why it was, because what do you need the extra words? So Gemara proves, you know, three proofs, but this one is like a straight real proof that the victim gets the carcass. Fine, the victim gets the carcass. So now the Gemara, and that's the conclusion. The victim gets the carcass. The question is, the question that I asked you 2 days ago, that's exactly what the Gemara is going to ask right now. Okay? And that starts a new sugya, I call it sugya 5. And the central issue is, who suffers any loss in value of the carcass from the time of damage until the payment? That becomes the issue over here, as you'll see in a minute how this relates. So let's take a look at the Gemara's now question. And it goes like this. Amar le Rav Kahana le Rav. Rav Kahana asks Rav. Now, right away, he's going to ask a question, what do you need a proof for? Now, not for you to get confused, I don't know if any of you are keeping track of the names here, but Rav Kahana was one of the three rabbis who proved to us that the damagee gets the carcass. We'll go back to the previous sugya. Rav Kahana was one of the rabbis who he himself proved it. Look at point number 6. Answer number 2 of Rav Kahana. Rav Kahana brought the pasuk, he will bring in aid, the treifa, odd until the price of the treifa, but the treifa goes to the person. Rav Kahana brought one of the proofs that the carcass goes to the damagee. And now we're going to have Rav Kahana asking a question, what do you need to bring proofs for? So that's a big problem. So my commentary says that there were two Rav Kahanas. There was a Rav Kahana from the earlier Amoraim, okay, the earlier period. Remember, the period of the rabbis of Gemara is about a 300-year period. So Kahana over there was not such an unusual name. So the first Rav Kahana over here on point 7 was from the earlier Amoraim, and this Rav Kahana was from the later Amoraim. So I really should put a little bracket over here. One second. Let me just figure. Hello? Why aren't you letting me do anything? Okay, the question of Rabbi Kahana. Different rabbi than the similar named in the previous sugya.
Spell it with a C instead of a K to be different.
Oh, no.
Put a Collins name.
Cabana. Okay, so just so in case you'd be noticing, how could he be asking the same question? It's a different rabbi. Different rabbi than the similar named. Similarly named in the previous sugya. Okay, just to get that clarified out of the way so we don't have any questions on that. So it's a later Rav Kahana. So what does he ask on Rav? He asks to Rav the following. What did you just say? What was Chizkiah's last thing? You told me the reason, since the Torah wrote the words that the dead belongs to him, that's the proof that the damage he pays. We had to bring a pasuk. A pasuk had to prove this to us. You see footnote 41, by the way, just says a little more than what I told you. Look at footnote 41. If the challenger here is the same Rav Kahana mentioned above, he should have cited his own verse and direct the question to himself. He brought a different verse and he should have asked himself. In Agos Ashri's text, however, the introductory phrase Rav Kahana said to Rav, Rava appears. This Rav Kahana was a disciple of Rava and lived after the Rav Kahana mentioned above. Okay, anyway, same idea. Anyway, so he asks, what are you telling me the fact that we brought a pasuk? What? So we brought the pasuk, that's we know yet the damagee collects the carcass, which would imply, ha lav hachi, but if we wouldn't have such a pasuk, havamina, I would have thought, demaziki, that the damager has to collect the carcass. In other words, you brought a pasuk proving that the damagee takes the carcass. It seems to say, if I wouldn't have such a pasuk, then my own logic would have said the damager gets the carcass. So he's saying, that's ridiculous. How can you think such a thing? What do you need to find a pasuk to say it goes to the damagee? He says like this. Hashtana, e aslay lididei kamatrefis. What if the damager had five carcasses from previous engagements? He happens to have five carcasses. He got in a big truck accident, was shipping the five cows, you know, and they all got killed. Right? He's got five carcasses, and 2 minutes later, his animal kills another animal. So they say, well, you gotta pay $100. He says, okay, I'll tell you what, I just valued, each carcass is worth $20. And I'll give you five carcasses for, could you not do that? I'd give him five carcasses, I'd give him whatever I want, I'd give him brand. Right? Yeah. So if he had his own many carcasses that equal the value of paying back the damagee, the money that was there, what would we have said? Yahivlay. He could give it to the injured party. Even if the injured party doesn't want it. That's even against the injured party's will. And how do we know this? Because we already learned long ago to Amar Mar, for the master said, we learned, remember the Gemara says the more fluence in the word, Yashiv, he shall return. And what did we learn? Larabos Shavakasev. You can pay back with something that's worth money, even though it's not money. And how far does it go? Vafilu Subin. He could even give him brand. Where do you learn to give a guy brand? So if I can give a guy brand to pay back, couldn't I give him carcasses? Certainly I can give him carcasses. So if I can give him carcasses, so what's even the thought on a logical level that the damager should collect the carcass and pay all the money? What are you talking about? If the damager had a number of carcasses himself. So let's even say, okay, the damager's gonna take the carcass. Let's say he has to take the carcass. Guess what he can do now? He can give the carcass right back. As part of payment. Right? And he can give brand, he can give carcasses. So what are you telling him to take the carcass for? It's an exercise of futility. Okay, I'm gonna take the carcass, I'm gonna pay it back. I have to pay it back $100 or equal to $100. Okay, let's start with the carcass. That's the first 20.
You said this yesterday.
I said it 2 days ago. I said it myself without seeing the Gemara. Yeah. Right? So that's probably Gemara. So I feel subin. So he can give him brand. So therefore, the conclusion of the question, D-Day, me boy, is it necessary to teach us explicitly that the carcass is the damaged parties? Let's see how he explains a little more. If the damager may make compensation with a previously owned carcass, for a carcass is at least the equivalent of brand, then it's pointless to assign him ownership of the carcass in question. He can anyway give it to the damaged party as payment. So that's the question. He says, this whole thing doesn't make any sense. The fact we have to find psukim. What do we find psukim for? It's pretty clear that of course the guy would have to keep. The damagee would have to keep. Now before we proceed, yeah?
Just one question.
Sure.
But doesn't that support the argument that the damager keeps the carcass? Now, as a separate transaction, he is now using that to pay part of the damage. He actually kept the carcass. He is now using that carcass to pay off part of the debt or damage.
Or we're saying the debt is only the difference in the price. Right. I mean, effectively, that's what it is. Like, why bother to schlep carcasses around?
The only reason he can mitigate the damage with the carcass is because he had the right to have the carcass.
Fine. So let's agree to that.
The damager.
So what's the point of the damager having to take the carcass? Since he can pay him out with it, so what's the point of having him take it? Right? Since he could pay with a carcass, so just leave the carcass where it's at. Because if you're going to make him, the assumption is, no, he takes it, now you have to give $100 cash.
But the pusik,
what are you talking about?
The pusik says that the damagee keeps the carcass. So he's asking,
why do I need a pusik to say that? Why do I need a pusik to say that?
So therefore, maybe you can say, the damagee keeps the carcass because he was damaged, but you still have to pay for the whole ox.
That for sure couldn't be. For sure couldn't be. Because the guy's gaining on the deal.
If the damagee had the right, according to the Torah, to keep the carcass regardless, he has the right for the carcass. It says he keeps the carcass.
Yeah, and now I pay what his damage is. His damage is $75.
Yeah.
His damage. Yeah, you have right to keep it. Fine. How much did I damage you? Not $100. I give you $75. You sell the carcass. Now you have an animal.
But isn't it obvious that if the damaged ox belonged to the certain person when it was alive.
Damagee, yeah.
Right. Then when it's dead, it still belongs to, because it's his property. So it's dead, but it was his. Why would it be the damager's?
Well, we might have wanted to say, listen, the guy wants $100. He can't do anything with the dead animal. The basic question is, who has to bother with the selling? It's a schlep to have to sell and this and that. Just give me $100 cash and forget about it. No. So, but if the guy could pay with brand, certainly could pay with the car, so let him just keep it. Now, this whole question is assuming something. What do I mean to say? I'm going to draw us back to another sugya. I'm sorry, but it's important. And you're going to see how it's good to like tie different concepts together. It helps us remember, number one. And you see there is some connection to what we're learning. So let's go back a sugya for a moment. So look what I wrote in my notes. Question of Rav Kahana, point number one. Question of Rav Kahana. Without the verse, the carcass will be to him. Without that verse, could we really think that the damager must keep the nevela? Nevela means the carcass. It means carcass. So let's just have another. Okay. Now, he brings a statement of a brisa. He brings that statement that we had. The other brisa. He will return, teaches that anything worth money may be given, even brand. Summation of the question is, the damager can pay with even other carcasses if he wants, all the more so with the victim's carcass. Right? So, no point in him taking the carcass. Okay, let's just add. So, there is no point in the damager. I'll fix that. Taking the carcass. Okay, now look what I put in the brackets over here. What I put in the brackets, see sugya number 25 on Mishnah 1. Why am I saying this? So let's go to sugya 25 in Mishnah. Just because we finished that old document doesn't mean it's gone and forgotten and we don't have anything to do with it. It relates very nicely over here, as we'll see in a second. Just give me a minute. Sugya 25. Now, if you recall, Sugya 25 was a continuation of Sugya 20, was, are there other forms of compensation payments besides Mesav Sadeh, the best of the field? And went through a whole sugya, and we came to a resolution that Rav Huna and Rav Asi said that one can initially pay with either Meitav land or cash. Their position was the initial payment is land or cash. Only when the damager has no land or cash can the damages be paid from movable property. That was that opinion. And we say that was arguing on the earlier sugya that said, no, bran, you could give straight away. It was a machlokes amuroim. The brisa says you can give bran. What does it mean you can give bran? Does it mean bran or any movable object is an initially acceptable payment? Or no, Rav Huna Rav Asi said, no, initial payment is either cash or best of the land. Only if you don't have that, then you can give that. Right? Point two, only when the damager has no cash or land can the damages be paid from movable property. Now, according to that opinion, do we have a question here? According to this opinion,
yeah,
we have a question. It's a very important for us to tell us he has to take the carcass. Because you know what? He usually cannot pay with a carcass. He has to pay cash. He has to pay land. So then we knew it. So now we need a pasuk to say it goes to the damagee. Then I do need the drasha. We were asking, what do you need the drasha for? I don't need the Torah to teach it goes to the damagee. I know anyway it goes to the damagee because the damager can pay whatever he wants. But according to Rav Huna Rav Asi, the damager cannot pay him whatever he wants. He first has to give him cash or good land. If he doesn't have that, okay, then the last option is that. And that's usually not going to be the in most cases. And therefore we would say, no, you take it, because 9 out of 10 times you're going to have to pay him cash or land. Okay, you're right. On the rare occasion, the guy Mamish has nothing. Now it's not, and the truth is it's hard to say he has nothing, because he has an ox who just gored.
Yeah, but that has to do with when land was damaged.
No, property damage. If my ox gores your ox and I have to pay money, how do you pay? Arba avos nezikin. Four damagers you pay b'meitav sadeo. And we learned, no, not just that, meitav or cash. According to Rav Huna Rav Asi, that is what you're supposed to pay. Only if you don't have anything else, you can give other things.
So if you have land or cash, and you're the damager,
according to this opinion, Rav Huna and Rav Asi, that you must pay one of those two.
And you have to pay with that. Therefore, when the damagee keeps the carcass...
No, the damagee now gives it to the damager without a pasuk. Without a pasuk. Without a pasuk. My logic says...
No, with a pasuk, but the pasuk is interpreted that the damager keeps it.
Oh, so now that's what I need the pasuk for. It's very good why I need the pasuk. Right? Without the pasuk, I don't know. I can't. What do you mean? He's got to pay him $100. He can't pay. See, the Gemara does, for whatever reason. I know what you're trying to get at. You're trying to get at, listen, only $75 damage. What are you bothering with the carcass at all for? The rabbis are saying, no. It's carcass really isn't a good solution for the guy. We need psukim to tell us what to do. We need psukim to tell us what to do. But if he can't pay with bran, according to this opinion, you can't pay with a carcass. Then I would think, maybe he has to pay the whole $100. And I need a pasuk to say no. Because you really should pay with cash. Right? So now, it's interesting. So now, who is this question like? Well, we said there was a machlokas, and let's go to the halacha. We rule like Rav Papa in sugya number 21, who argued on Rav Huna Rav Asi. Where they said, his opinion is damages are initially collected from meitav or any metaltalin, even bran. All metaltalin are considered meitav. Right? Only if there's no metaltalin to cover their damage, you collect from meitav property. So Rav Papa says you can initially play with bran. You can initially play with carcasses. Right? So this question that we're having in our sugi goes according to which rabbi? Rav Papa. Because Rav Papa says you can initially play with bran. And that's the Gemara. The Gemara is quoting that Yoshiv to include bran. And they're assuming bran means as an initial payment. You following me here? So now I see you wondering, well, how did I know, not me, how did the Rama, how do you know that this was the halacha? We have a machlokas, Rav Papa and Rav Huna and Rav Asi. Can bran be an initial payment or not? Correct? So how do the latter rabbis know what the halacha was? You know why? Because they're looking at today's Gemara. They're looking at Rav Kahana, who comes after all these rabbis, and he's asking a question based on only Rav Papa's position. So you see that the latter rabbis were using Rav Papa's position as a framework to ask questions from. That could only be if we hold like Rav Papa. You see, I wrote down here halacha like Rav Papa. So he said, well, how did the Rambam know that? Or whoever, it's the Shulchan Aruch, how do they know that? Gemara didn't tell us. Gemara just gives us two separate opinions. So three pages later, when Rav Kahana, the later rabbi who came after all these rabbis, he has all the Talmud in front of him, he says, what are you talking about? What are you in a puzzle to say the carcass goes to the damagee? It's obvious it goes to the damagee, because the damager can pay whatever he wants. Well, that only works according to Rav Papa, that question. It doesn't work according to Rav Huna. So that's a proof that the rabbis at the end of the Talmud already were subscribing to Rav Papa's position. It follows, I should put in over here, we rule like Rav Papa, so I should say, see, sugya, we said this is five, right?
Right.
See sugya number five, on Mishnah two. See how this all connects? You see? That's how you have to learn Gemara.
Right.
You know, you can't just learn one page and goodbye, you don't need to know it anymore. Right? It's connected three pages later.
So you mean you have to review?
Yeah, everybody's got to review. Yeah, that's right.
You got to go over it a second time after we finish the shiur here?
Yeah.
Sometime later?
Yeah.
How about a third and fourth
time? How about 101 times, right? Anyway, I'm sorry I was belaboring the point here, but I think it was an important idea. Because we can't just say goodbye, that was an old sugya, you don't need to know anything. The whole question is only predicated, now again, point three, see sugya number 25 on Mishnah 1. This question is only according to Rav Papa, but not according to Rav Huna or Rav Asi. Right? So that's why the latter rabbis do, that's why we paskin like Rav Papa. Because Rav Kahana, who came much later, the end, we said there's a different Rav Kahana than the first Rav Kahana earlier in the sugya, it's a later Rav Kahana. So later Rav Kahana, if he's basing his question, because he held like Rav Papa, we might find other incidences of other rabbis again holding Rav Papa. At least we have one over here. So that's a good cross-reference, as they say. Okay, anyway, so that's the question. So we have a question. You're telling me without the verse, I would think that the damager has to keep the carcass. So they said, what do you mean? If the damager can pay with anything, including brand, why would I think he has to keep the car? What do I need a puzzle for? Even without a puzzle? That's the question I asked on Monday morning. So now we have to come up with an answer to that question. Okay, so let's continue now with the Gemara. The Gemara answers, no. Lo, tzricha. No, we need the pasuk. You're right. The pasuk really, we know that the damagee has to keep it. We know that. So what do I need the pasuk to say? No, that what it says, and the debt is to him, it means the damagee. The Torah is taking a little different point. Ella, it's talking about lepechas nevela. It's talking about when the carcass depreciates in value from the time the animal dies until, let's say, the next day when we take it to court. We take the case to court. It's already depreciated $5 in value. So it says, Hames Yelo, the dead carcass is his. What do you mean to say the dead carcass is his? It means, how do we deal with depreciation of the dead carcass? Let's look at point 44. That is, scripture teaches that the carcass belongs to the damaged party from the moment of the animal's death. It belongs to him. So that if the carcass decays and declines in value in the interval between the killing and the trial, it is the damaged party who must absorb the loss. Hence, the damager pays him only the difference between the animal's value while alive and the carcass's worth at the time of death. This case is distinguished from that of an injured animal. Wait a minute, what about an injured animal? How
different.
Do you deal with an injured animal?
That's different.
An injured animal, we don't say at the time of what it was worth when it was injured. There, the amount of damage is determined according to the animal's condition at the time of the trial. For it is necessary to wait in order to ascertain the full extent of its injuries. When an animal gets injured, you don't know how injured it is till you come to court. You know, it could be a day till the full extent of the injury, you know, they have, what do you call it, whiplash, you know, things like that. They always say, oh, go right away. And it could be the next day, oh, my neck is killing me. Here, however, the damaged party must sell the carcass immediately. In other words, what's going on over here? The damaged guy said, listen, I'll wait, you know, why, damaged party may think, why should I hurry? I'll wait a couple of days. Meanwhile, I think it's less in value, but I'll have to pay me more cash. I said, When that is damaged, that carcass is yours, buddy. You better turn around right now and go to the store and sell it as fast as you can. Get the full $25 for it. You know, turn it over as soon as you turn it over. Whatever cash you're going to get it fast. Now you do it fast, that's fine. But if it goes more in value down, no, nothing doing. Now obviously there's a lot of things we'd have to know. We'd have to know what the value of the animal is when it got killed, what the value of the carcass is. Could be there's a standard value of a carcass. I guess it must be standard rates. You know, carcass of a freshly killed ox, $25, you know, per pound. Face, you know, seven cents per pound for a fresh carcass. A stale carcass, 6 cents a pound, whatever. So anyway, what the Torah is saying is, because there is a real issue, who deals with the subsequent depreciation of the value? So now we knew that the damagee keeps the carcass, and we knew that the damager just pays the difference. I don't need a pasuk for that, because we hold like Rav Papa, who says you can pay back with anything you want. That's not the issue. The issue is the Torah is taking it a step further. Now that we know that the damager has it, the damagee has it, but who has to suffer the loss of value from the time it was killed till the time it is brought to trial and brought, if there is a depreciation in value? And it's saying, Hames Yalo, the dead carcass is the damagee's, and it's his right away. So now, at that point, I've done the damage, and it's not going to, you're not going to make me pay more. If that carcass goes down in value, because the owner of the carcass is taking his time to take it to being sold, well, that carcass is yours, so you're out of business and you're losing money. And that's what the Torah is teaching us, that the carcass, depreciation is suffered by the owner of the animal. So you say, well, that's pretty hard for him. No. So immediately, that moment, go right now to the treif butcher shop and give and sell them the carcass for what it's worth right now. This expedites the process so nobody can try to make any tricks over here. If the guy just sits around and wait. Now obviously it's gotta be speaking in a case where the owner had the option to do that. The commentaries add, if the damagee knows that his animal died, which the guy knows his animal died. He comes to court 3 days later and says, you know, it's worth very little. Says, what were you doing? Why didn't you sell it right away? Why did you allow the damage to be worse? But if let's say the owner was in China, and your ox gores the guy's ox, and the owner comes back 3 days later, sees an animal that's dead for 3 days, no. Then the damaging party has to pay the lower value, because the damagee couldn't do anything about it. Right? That's not fair. But if he knows about it, then he has to pay. All right. So that's the insight. Who suffers the loss? Again, strike number two for the damaged party. Not only does the damaged party sit with the carcass, has to bother to sell the carcass, he better sell that carcass fast to make sure it doesn't go down in value, because it goes down in value, he suffers the loss of it going down in value as well.
Didn't it say in the note, if you go back on that note, you have to wait for the trial?
That's only by damage, by an animal that gets damaged, not killed.
You can sell
he
it.
Says when a cow breaks, when you gore an animal and break its leg, I'll read it again. Here. That is, scripture teaches that the carcass belongs to the damaged party from the moment of the animal's death, so that if the carcass decays and declines in value in the interval between the killing and the trial, it is the damaged party who must absorb the loss.
But can he sell it before the trial?
Yes. He gets a receipt. He goes to the treif butcher shop and says, I sold Bessie weighing 300 pounds, 6 cents on the dollar. I got $18 for it, and that's what the damage was.
He doesn't have to wait to the trial.
No, that's not a good thing to wait for the trial.
Because now
it's not good for him. He's going to lose money. Now, obviously, we have to assume that he didn't do any shtick and they lied. You know, you can go to a goy and say, you know, just lie and say it was worth less and you pay me cash. You know, obviously, there must have been part of the system was the Jewish courts probably had, you know, just like you have collision centers, you know, after an accident, you have to go to a recognized collision center, right? So you have to go to recognize the appraiser that we know it's going to be honest.
A Nevela center,
or whatever. And there was. The goyim had to eat meat. What's the matter to the goyim if it's a Nevela? They don't care. What do we do now when you check the animal it's not kosher? You go right to the goyim.
Right there.
So we have to know. But the point is being, we're expediting the process, and you see that it's in the, and it's now, you say, well, let's do the same thing and make the damager lose. Let him rush. The answer is he can't rush because he doesn't have the carcass. Yeah. Let's be pragmatic. Where is the carcass? usually in the owner's home. Right? The owner can say, oh, sorry, you know, can imagine if the damager has to sell it, he's gonna call up, okay, can I go over now? I really want to sell this. I'm not home right now.
It's not convenient now. I didn't
pick up the phone for 3 days. You know, because the damagee's in no rush to get it sold. He'd rather get more cash, wouldn't he?
Yeah, sure.
So we have to, in a way, to make sure that what I damage, and I take responsibility. But I'm not going to pay for a decaying carcass. So who's in a position to get rid of that carcass as fast as possible? Generally speaking, it's the damaged party. So now you know that happens. Okay, I know you were planning on going to a bar mitzvah this afternoon, but now you got to go first to the Nevela Center and sell it there fast. If you want to be able to collect full compensation that you think it's worth. So this is the new insight in this sugya, that you pay, that the chiddush of the pasuk, and the dead belongs to him, is saying that the dead carcass belongs to the injured party immediately, and any subsequent depreciation is lost to the damaged party. And that is point 4. Answer of Rav. The verse teaches that the victim suffers any loss in value of the carcass from the time of damage until the payment. Okay, good. So now it's a nice, neat question and answer. We see from this part. So now, not only did we learn yesterday that the damagee is the one who gets the carcass, we have now seen that the pasuk is teaching the damagee is going to suffer any financial loss that happens to the depreciation. What's going to happen tomorrow is the Gemara is going to bring, it's already 3 minutes till davening. We've been learning for 32 minutes. So we're going to learn, we're going to suggest that this fact that the damagee suffers the loss is indeed a machlokes tanoim. That it's an argument of earlier rabbis, and there's other rabbis who suggest that no, the damager suffers the financial loss. And maybe we're only presenting one side of the coin. That's the more it's going to suggest, and we're going to have to deal with that issue, and that will bring out some other interesting halachas. Because there's another hassle we haven't thought about. Whose object is to pay for towing expenses?
Supper to the market,
or even simpler. Let's say the animal fell into a pit. You gotta call CAA, right?
Yeah.
And say, listen, my cow's in a pit, I gotta get it out. It's a 500-pound cow. I can't
get it out.
You know, I need a forklift and all these things. Well, get it out costs you $25. Wait a minute. Who's gotta bring it to court?
Yeah, he's going to schlep it.
That's another issue we haven't talked about. That's all going to come. Stay tuned.
You sold it. You don't have to bring it to court.
You can't sell it till you take it out of the pit.
Oh, court.
But you got to get it out of the pit. Yeah. Can you sell it?
Yeah, I realize.
You got to schlep it to the carcass center.
Right.
Let's say it's not in the pit. You know, you got to get a tow truck. You can't just schlep that cow. That's a 500-pound cow.
You can't just put it in the back.
You got to top it. Get onto a wagon. You got to hire a few.
To court if you sold it already.
What?
You got to schlep it to court.
You got
to
schlep it somewhere. Yeah. You got to get it out of your house.
You got to get it.
Now, who's got to do that? There's going to be costs involved in that.
The damager.
Well, you think it's so simple, right? So far, you've been wrong twice.
Whoa, show. 2 out of 3 ain't bad.
Yeah, the Gemara is shaping our minds. See how Torah's making us think differently? That's what glad we're learning this Torah. All right, so we'll do that, and God willing, finish up that sugya tomorrow.
No, we said Rav Asi and Rav who? Rav Huna, right.
Okay, guys.
Rav, can you try the PDF file?